Can I ask you, what is the link between, you say, like, the man is really shut down, like, there was no room for like physical affection, verbal affection. What's the association between that and then having an affair?
Well, because your life is bland, and when you're shut down, your wife is trying to get from you constantly. That's where women get the beautiful term of a nagging, controlling bitch, because she's like, I just want you so bad, and you're over here like constantly on your phone or playing games or out with your buddies or doing, hobbies. And we miss you. We want you here. And when she gets tired of asking kindly, she becomes angry. And she's like, what? Why don't you give a shit about us? The only thing you care about is work, right? And it just escalates from there. And he's, just like shutting down more and more and more, where sometimes he might blow up and, fight back. But a lot of times, even blowing up and fighting back is still a shutting down, right? It's just loud, loud shutting down.
And we are on. Welcome back to the Too Old for This Shit podcast. I'm your host, Angie Sorensen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. By the way, if you're one of the oldies, you may have noticed. I don't know if you've noticed, but basically, I think I'm pronouncing the name of my podcast better. I've actually taken voice lessons. Obviously, now I've lost kind of losing my voice because I've just done a 2-hour recording. Not with Sean, just another one. I'm just doing this intro a bit a few days later. But yeah, anyway, I just wanted to check if you'd noticed. Because, I don't always pronounce things fully. Whereas now I'm actually trying to do that because it's important to be understood. Okay. So if you're new here, welcome, welcome. Listen, this is an interview-based podcast where you'll get a variety of guests and topics, anything from sex workers to doctors, scientists, flat earther, therapists, coaches, psychologists, you name it, a whole big range. Also, women who escape Christian cults in the US. So yes, a wide, wide range. So today, in today's episode, this is Sean. She came back for another round. And basically today we are talking about infidelity and how she helps couples rehab or come back from an affair. And I really enjoyed today's conversation. Sean has such a calming, calming voice. She's just calming, just in general. I find her just really soothing. And she had such a lovely approach to the subject, and I really enjoyed hearing her and share some really great insights. And so that's what I'm going to say. I just want you to hear it directly from her. If you find her advice helpful, I have put together a takeaway guide for you to download. You can find the link in the show notes. You do not need it while you're listening. But it's a great way to have all the key takeaways in one place if you need it for later. So, without further ado, help me give a big, warm welcome to Sean. Let's begin. Welcome back to the Too Old for This Shit podcast, Sean.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. Your first episode, well, your last and first episode came out in March 2023, and it was really, really popular with the audience. And it was episode number 97, and it was called, well, it is called From Power Struggle to Complicity in Your Couple. So I think a lot of people can relate to that. I can definitely relate to that. It's the power struggle. So, but today we're going to talk about something quite different. And we're going to talk about infidelity and how to help couples come back from an affair or rehab from an affair. And I do have quite a bit to say right before we start, but before we do that, I just want to ask you, Sean, if you could please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do for those who haven't met you yet.
Absolutely. Yes. Hi, I'm Dr. Sean Haywood. I live in Brevard, North Carolina. And yeah, I've been doing this work for about 25 years and, you know, we have an amazing team and yeah, we're just so excited about this podcast and the work we do. And we can't wait to share all about infidelity and recovering from it.
So when you say we do, do you mean you talk about your partner?
My husband is definitely part of this company. And then we have a whole team. We have other coaches and, you know, our tech team and admin staff and, you know.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. It takes a village.
It does.
It does take a village. Can I just ask you, because I know that's a bit of a pivot with the infidelity, like what got you into this topic?
You know, we just started to notice that there was, I guess two pieces. So one, there isn't a lot of really great help for infidelity. And what you hear most of the time is it takes, you know, an average of 2 to 5 years to recover. It requires that you have a therapist as a couple and you each have your own individual therapist. And I just knew that couples could rehab from affair much, much faster. We work with couples for 3 to 6 months and they are, when we do our graduation calls at the end, they are hugging and smooching and they're, you know, the biggest challenge is like their brains get very stuck on cycles of thinking about, you know, images of texts or sometimes videos or walking in on someone, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously extremely painful images that behave very much like PTSD. And so we just wanted to create an entire program plus a curriculum that allowed us to work with body, mind, spirit, and people's neurology to help them transcend some of these really, really painful pieces of infidelity far faster. And then the other piece of that is we 100% know that it is an extremely superior plan to have one person shepherd your entire journey. So our team, if a couple is working with me or Kim or Jean, right, the whole coupleship is stewarded by one person. And yeah, that's for some like really, really important and specific reasons, but I want to go into all the details. So yeah, that's why we have pivoted. There was just such a need for a really, really great program.
So is it so that instead of having a couple therapists and then an individual therapist for each partner, you have mm-hmm. the one person sort of like looking after the couple in therapy?
That's correct. Yep.
That's different. Like how does that make that different or better? Like, you know, to have that one person instead of two mm-hmm. people.
Yeah. So one, we hold all the puzzle pieces, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have three people, then you can't possibly know everything. And it is human nature to attempt to get someone to align with your vantage point.
Yeah.
And so it just can never be honest. It just, even if people are trying to be honest, it can't be because it's slanted in one direction. And so the individual therapist, you know, each individual therapist and the couples counselor or therapist, they're missing unbelievably invaluable pieces of the puzzle and so, you know, in that route, it is 2 to 3 years, if ever, a recovery because you're missing so much. Yeah. And then there's the skill development, right? Like you have to be learning new skills. You can't just talk your way out of slowing your brain down and eventually turning off that hypervigilant state. You have to have skills to do that.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, also, like, if you're linked to the one therapist, right, as a couple, you also have to learn to be really honest, I guess, because it's, and also you probably learn to listen to very hard things, you know, from, I mean, that you're gonna have to learn to listen to have hard conversations. So is what I'm saying. Like, you have to learn to have hard conversations, right? Because, like, when I listen sometimes to Esther Perel, right? She has a whole podcast series on with couples, right? With infidelity.
Yes, of
And
course.
it's really interesting because at the beginning you're siding with one person. What I do, I'd be like, oh my God, you know, terrible. The other person is just trash, you know, or mean or selfish. And you just have, you know, whatever preconceived ideas. And then she's sometimes I agree or dis sometimes I disagree a little bit of who she sort of sometimes she supports more one than the other. And I'm like, But what I always often get is that the more I listen, the more I'm like, oh, wait, there's a whole other side to this story. And there's a whole other side as to why someone is acting in a certain way. And actually, often they're also suffering, you know, they're really suffering as well, you know, whoever you thought was the bad guy. But infidelity, right? Infidelity is huge. You know, I don't know if there is anywhere in the world where you have zero infidelity. You
No.
know, I mean, you have websites dedicated to married people looking for sex, right? You have a lot
Yes.
of married people looking for extramarital. And on top of that, you have people who aren't married, right? There may be boyfriend, girlfriend, they may be cohabiting or not cohabiting, but there's obviously a spectrum in infidelity from my vantage point, right? So I see, like, there's a pure physical one, a one night stand. There is the emotional one. There could be a fling, a full-on relationship, or an absolute infatuation over someone that you've never had physical contact with, but you could have an emotional affair. You could have a physical one ending with children. You could have an emotional one where people fall in love and have children. Then you have what I would, for me, call the deep, deep betrayal, when you have an entire double life, right? So people having a complete separate family down the street from you. I personally know friends who their dad had a double life, and he only told one of them when she was a teenager, and then it all unraveled. But they have a brother now, right? That they're very close. That they, you know, they're close too. But he had a double life, full double life, right? And yeah. So I wanted to ask you today, Sean, like, which part is it that you'd like to focus on today? Or which part is it that you sort of are more specialized in?
Well, I mean, I have one thing to comment on that when you were sharing a little bit ago, but in general, we see it all, of course, but we specialize in working with couples where the man has had the affair. Now, that's not like 100%, but it's like 99.9%, where the man has had the affair. And most of our couples are married. We do, here and there get people who are not married, but cohabitating. And so we see it all from, what, of course, in the therapeutic Bible, the DSM-5, there's not a diagnosis for sexual addiction, but certainly there are patterns that mimic addiction, of course. So we might see people who are have been, visiting with prostitutes, or literally the entire gamut of what you said, from emotional to pornography addiction to having a long-term relationship. The most common dynamic we see is up to a year where something has been going on. It might have started out as, it almost always starts out as friends that then got carried away, right? And usually, as you might suspect, it's people from the office, or it's usually someone because the people that we work with, they're good men whose marriage started to fall off, right? And then it was like the shit that happens in a marriage. It's like, okay, you didn't do this, and I don't feel cared for, and we're not connecting. And right, as soon as disconnection starts to unravel, then a couple will start to naturally fight more, because what they're actually fighting for is to reclaim that connection, but they don't know how to go about it in a way that's vulnerable and inclusive and invites someone in. They go at it in a way that's like nagging or shutting down or avoiding or, whatever. And then all of a sudden there's this person in your sphere, right? I always refer to it as opportunistic infidelity. And it's like, oh, we met at the cooler and had a little, drink of water and had a funny joke. And then a funny joke turns into some light flirting. And then light flirting turns into the next thing, right? And then all of a sudden it's like your chemicals in your body, the dopamine and norepinephrine and serotonin, like it's all just going wackadoodle when you see this person, right? Like we are literally built to quote unquote fall in lust and procreate. And so when that starts to take root, it's like, oh, my marriage at home is so lame. And, my wife is nagging me and my kids are this and that, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden there's this like seeming ray of sunshine, right? And it's like, and we liken it to gambling a lot of times, where it's like you put a quarter in, you pull the lever, right? Which might be a text or a lunch or this or that. And then it evolves from there.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. I think it's like it's,
Certainly.
I mean, it's, I'm not sure also, like sometimes, like you said, like what happens before, when, which sort of explains, like, why, like, I don't know if it explains, but it sort of like brings a bit of understanding as to maybe why people cheat, right? So, like, like if there's an underlying issue, so they're not getting from, they're not getting in their relationship, and it's easier to look at the shiny object, right? The new shiny object, than of than the pain of being vulnerable and being seen, right? Because a lot of us, I think really want someone to see us and know us all the way, like know us all the way down to our core and our bones and, tippy toes, right? But that's also a very scary place to let someone in. And I'm not sure
It
that
sure is.
just because you are in a relationship or even married doesn't mean that someone actually really know you that
Oh,
well.
rarely.
Right. So I think, I was wondering as well. I think sometimes there's also like there could be something else, right? Like there's like the desire for freedom, right? Like you could feel really suffocating, and it has all kinds of things to do with your childhood, right? But all of a sudden you
Oh,
feel
yeah.
trapped, and you feel like you're not the person you normally are. You're like, you're not as fun anymore, and things are very like depressing all the time. Wanting to be desired as well is big. I mean, it's very easy for someone new to be adoring, right? They don't know jack shit
Of
about you.
course, that's right.
And I think some people also is try to see a different version of themselves. It's like like with friends. Yeah, with some friends, there's one friend actually at work, I am never funny with her. Like it's just like it's almost like we cancel each other out, but I really love her. Like I think she's great, but I'm always super serious. And then there's this other group of girls at work where I'm literally like just being really silly, and they understand my humor, and I'm just being really inappropriate. And it's like we're having a great time, and they're also the same. They're also like, they'll say like they'll also be inappropriate and just like, don't really give a fuck, right? So, and that really brings out a different side of me, and I like that version more, right? So if I had someone with whom, even though I like them, I was always serious, I don't think I would be able to go down that route, right? Even if they may be the right person. But so I wanted to so I mean, are there any other reason why people cheat than what we just covered?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it generally, if it's not someone who is strategically on a website looking or, trying to hire a prostitute or something like that, then it is generally like, I'm not enjoying my life. I'm unfulfilled. A lot of times we see alcohol addiction. People have gotten to a point where they're unhappy enough to start leaning on other escapes, right? There could be mental illness, right? There could be depression, anxiety. We see a lot of couples who they're both executives or professionals or have their own business, so they have a lot of stress. Their lives have sort of taken over and replaced their coupleship with busyness and children, and that's where you start to pull away and start to become, roommates. They typically have a history of some kind of trauma, right? And interestingly, it could be either partner, right? She might have, the wife might have physical, mental, emotional, sexual neglect, abuse, abandonment, right? And her growing up. Or he might. I would say probably like 40% of the time they both have a lot of trauma, and the rest of the time, if I were to guess, don't quote me on that exactly. But the rest of the time, one of them has pretty severe trauma, and then the other partner, who's typically the man, we see more of the trauma in our women, and the men have grown up in an environment that didn't seem particularly traumatic, but there wasn't space for emotions. They weren't like their dad was very shut down, or there wasn't much I love yous or hugging or affection. And so they know how to play this shut down role. And when you're in love and you're first getting married and all the stuff, like that stuff is easy to avoid or not see or not tap into. But when you've been together 2, 5, 10, 15, 40 years, right? It's like then all the stuff comes up. And when you haven't gotten on a healing journey along the way, then things unravel, right? It could just as easily, one thing we really, really, really try to teach wives to help them disassociate it from being so damn personal, because, obviously it's an extremely personal betrayal, is to help them understand that it wasn't about them. Right? Like both partners are responsible for the state of a marriage, but only the man can make a choice. Or, I mean, obviously women cheat as well. But in this context, like the man has made that decision. That's not about her. That's not because,
Can I ask
yeah,
you
go
what?
ahead.
So can I ask you what is the link between, you say, like, the man is really shut down, like, there was no room for, like, physical affection, verbal affection. What's the association between that and then having an affair?
Well, because your life is bland, and when you're shut down, your wife is trying to get from you constantly. That's where women get the beautiful term of a nagging, controlling bitch, because she's like, I just want you so bad, and you're over here like constantly on your phone or playing games or out with your buddies or doing, hobbies. And we miss you. We want you here. And when she gets tired of asking kindly, she becomes angry. And she's like, why don't you give a shit about us? The only thing you care about is work, right? And it just escalates from there. And he's, just like shutting down more and more and more, where sometimes he might blow up and, fight back. But a lot of times, even blowing up and fighting back is still a shutting down, right? It's just loud, loud shutting down. And so then all of a sudden there's this like person who thinks you're groovy, and at home you feel like you can't do anything, right? And which is not her intention in any way. It's just like, we want you to be a part of our damn family, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, she's so cute. And wow, does she like me? Wow, I haven't felt liked in a really long time. And, of course, the real truth is they have grown not to like themselves. And so they're trying to put some kind of band-aid on that, instead of doing the inner work. And that's, Angie, that's really why you said something a few minutes ago, maybe 5 minutes ago, about being on one side or the other when you hear like the context or you hear someone share. One thing that we are, I would say, a huge defining factor for our company is that I don't care what you've done. Our team, whoever you're working with, will absolutely love and adore you as a human being and value you. People are never shamed. In fact, when I do all the graduation calls for couples, and the thing I hear most commonly is, for both of them, we have never felt so loved and safe in our entire life. And I'm like, well, what's the foundation for healing, you know? And so we just really, really make sure that men know, like, yes, you did a really shitty thing. Okay. Yep. And you need to own it. And there's a lot of cleanup to do. It doesn't make you a terrible person. You're still a good human. You just got lost along the way. We wouldn't, you know, society is so just cruel to cheaters. And yes, there are some men that truly don't care, but most men have gotten lost along the way.
How do you know if they're just selfish and don't care, or if they just, you know, made a mistake or have some damage, or how do you know the difference?
Yeah. Well, one, they are riddled with crippling shame and guilt, and they will do anything to reclaim their marriage. When I get people on a breakthrough call to talk about, you know, if they're a good fit for our program, I mean, he's in tears. He's broken. He's like, you know, oftentimes a couple finds out how much they actually did love each other. And yeah, it was a real hard way to do it. But, you know, all of a sudden he's like, oh my God, what have I been doing with my life? I have this family who's my wife's biggest anger, peace, or resentment is that she wants to spend more time with me. You know, and it's just like you've gotten so far away from your own heart and you know, your inner authenticity and integrity, and people are unhappy. So many people are unhappy. And we wouldn't, you know, yell at someone and shame them for being an alcoholic necessarily. We would go, oh, that's an illness. Well, infidelity behaves very much the same way. It's all an escape, right? Whether I'm overeating or overspending or over exercising or getting attention elsewhere, right? It's all an escape because I don't feel good on the inside.
Yeah. It's like a band-aid and an avoidant way of coping, right? A little bit.
Exactly.
I mean, I can also see why, like, if someone is constantly after you because you're not spending enough time with them, it has the opposite effect, right? Because it's almost like they're trying to make you feel guilty. I mean, it's like that it becomes a parent relationship, because it's that's what parents do, right? They're like, you never come and visit, you never when you do come and visit, oh, you already have to leave, like, why are you here so short? I'm like, well, you wanted me to have a job, right? Like, when I have a job, I can't just like not go to work, or I can't just take a whole month off. Like, I gotta go back, like, you know, it's like, yeah, but and I think and you obviously understand where they're coming from when someone does that, but it does become it feels like whatever you do is not enough, and that puts you on the back foot, right? And I mean I've been single for 4 years. Like, the last breakup sort of, that was a saturation for me. I was done. And I think, like, to me, like, I understand, like, there's so much that comes up in you, you know, when you get close to someone, but it's not just that what comes up for you is what comes up for them. And then you have the melting pot of all of that. Yes. And, you know, in today's society, people don't stick it out really. Or, you know, so it's like you go through all of that, those growing pains or whatnot, you know, and then it's over and you're like, well, it's so I think there's a lot of, like, I understand, you know, I don't understand marriage because I'm not married, right? But I can understand why, you know, if you're constantly feeling like a disappointment or hurt, you at some point you just clock out. Yeah, you're like, nah, we're good.
yeah. And in a variety of ways, right? Yeah. Like, not everybody is checking out through an affair, but And you said a moment ago, like, people are just like, oh, we're just done, right? It's so interesting, and you just how society has evolved because it like, whatever, 100 years ago, you stayed together forever, no matter what, even if your husband was beating the shit out of you, right? You didn't have anywhere to go. There wasn't, it was just different. And then, like, fast forward to now, it's, I mean, obviously getting a divorce is not easy emotionally, but it's not hard. It's like simple, right? And so now people aren't fighting. They're not doing their own heart work. They just make it about their partner. They're just like, oh, well, he's a jerk or she's a bitch and this and that. And then we're just going to go. It's like people are trying to live on an Amazon 2-day delivery,
Yeah,
mentality.
there's this philosophy that people think there's so much choice because we have all the apps you have. I mean, Instagram is a dating app, okay? Let's call it what it is. I mean, I don't use it as a dating app, but I can see how it's very easy, to that you just have access to so many people in there, and some people utilize that, right? So, but I think, you said, that divorce is, quote unquote, easy or easier than it used to be. Try dating, being in a relationship and not being married. People just bounce like so easily. Like the first thing is like, so it's like, yeah, it's yeah, just there's no, the commitment is difficult now.
It really is different. It's really different. And there's such a like perfectionistic intolerance for humanness that I'm seeing. And single, this isn't just like in our couples, but just in general. It's like, I had a client this week who is in a new relationship. She's dating, and this is just n not an affair couple, and or not an affair person. And she was like, they're like a month in, okay? And she's like, oh, I don't know, because he doesn't exercise enough, and doesn't he care about living a long time? And I'm not sure if I can be with someone like that. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Listen, he already works out. He's already like 50% ahead of all the other men you've seen. I think, but I
And
think,
kind and loving and like all this stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, we need to talk about your perfectionism, right? Because it's an in perfectionism says I have an intolerance for humanness, for the human condition. And so you can't put that out on other people if you don't put it on yourselves, right? And so yes, I think that something that our clients really learn going through our program is like, well, anybody can heal. It's not rocket science. Any couple can mend, even from something as shitty as infidelity, if you're willing.
I definitely want to circle back to the infidelity, but before we do that, I just want to say it sounds like maybe she's like either she's not aware of what it is that what the value she's looking for, because you need to have some values looking for. It could be that he wants kids or he I don't know whatever the values would be, but and I'm not sure if that's necessarily a value, that's like a life choice, so that's maybe different, but it could also be that she's like a maximizer, right? Some people are like, we're looking for that perfection. We're looking for that big on romance. We've watched too many Hollywood movies and we think that, that's the standard. But I have to say, look, for me, one thing I would not, I can't stand is people who don't have good dental hygiene and don't floss. I've dated like my last like did not floss. And I don't care what people say. If you don't floss, you taste like cheese. Especially in the morning, it's disgusting. Floss. It's like, I can't, I'm not putting up with that. Like, I take good care of my teeth. Please floss and brush your teeth twice a day. Like, just don't. Like, it's just gross.
You crack me up. Well, this is our dentist plug for the day.
There you go. Yeah. Maybe I should find a sponsor that's like that makes
Okay.
flosses. So how do I, so. Because that's obviously we're going to talk about like rebuilding trust and moving forward, but I wanted to first just talk about the moment when someone finds out, because there's only two things I sort of I'm thinking of is either someone finds out about it, either your partner is revealing it to you, they've t told you, or you found out because you found a text, you found something, or someone else told you about it, right? So is there a good way, is there a better way of finding out? Is there a better way of revealing the situation? Like, how would you say about the revealing? Like, how do we do the big reveal?
Yeah, so rare, it is very rare that there is a big reveal. I can think of just one client who had what was considered a very deep God moment and was like, what are you doing, you dumb, dumb head, right? And
so I don't understand. You said you've had out of, so most people,
they don't reveal it them. They don't offer the information. Like, people who are having an affair don't very rarely offer the information. Like, hey, I was having an affair.
Is it maybe unless they want to leave?
Well, yes, potentially. Oh, yeah.
That could be a way of breaking up.
Exactly. Yes. I've met someone else. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. If there's someone who wants to stay with their partner, right? Because, you know, our clients almost always say, I never intended, and it is so true, I never intended to leave my family. I love my wife, and they do, which obviously is not easy to believe as a wife, but they're not going at it, you know, to try to fall in love. But of course, it, you know, I don't actually think you can love two people like that, but they think they fall in love, and sometimes want to leave. I forgot the other part of your question, Angie.
Yeah. So most people don't reveal the information about, so the cheater does not tend to come up with the information. So most people stumble across it.
Yes. So normally how it goes is he starts to act different. Obviously, it's very hard to be connecting in any way with your wife when you're having an affair. Right. And then he looks for and acts on, you know, mentalized, rationalized reasons to be more distant and to justify actions. And it's like, oh, well, we had a fight, so I'm going to text so-and-so. And then it's just the whole like gambling, right, where they're texting constantly. And so she's noticing that he's like putting his phone down really quickly and, you know, yada, yada. So she notices things and starts to ask more, what's going on? This is one of the hardest things, oddly enough, for women to get over is the gaslighting, which
of
is,
course, cause it, yeah,
oh
because,
my God, yeah. Yeah, like, you can't trust me to do anything, right? Like, they get real righteous and indignant. And it's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, just tell her no, you know? Like, why make her feel like she's crazy, which they often do. And they're like, oh my God, I'm such a bad person. I don't even believe my husband. And then they get their like investigator hat on, right? Because there's something inside them that knows. We all know, even people who tell me they're blindsided at some point along their journey, they're like, I did know. We have knowings. We have intuition, right? There's always a something that we know. And then they start digging in. It's like, okay, well, where's the dirt? Is it an email? Is it on text? Because, you know, people are crafty. Is it on WhatsApp? Is it somewhere else? Where is he going? Okay, I've secretly put, you know, low-jacked his phone. And then they get actual evidence and they come to their partner and, you know, they're sick to their stomach, not sleeping, not eating along the way, knowing that what they're going to find, but wishing that it wasn't true. And then the moment comes where, you know, he might deny. A lot of times they're like, oh, well, but we didn't have sex. And sometimes they're not having sex, but, you know, you went away for a weekend. No one's buying that, right? And then they come clean and what we kind of call trickle truths, like, come out, you know, over time. And it's like, you know, it's hard to tell the truth about that when you're literally looking at this person that you love, truly love, even though that seems like a contradiction. And you are seeing the most unbelievable anguish that you've ever seen in your life. And you're the one that did it. That's why
you're the one that caused it. You're the one who caused the anguish of the other. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's why we have compassion for both partners, because his brain actually moves into a hypervigilant state as well that sort of mimics PTSD. Some people call it actual PTSD, some say mimic. So either way. And, you know, and so now they're both of them are in this state of like shock and awe and what do we do? And right. So sometimes it's fighting. Sometimes it's okay. We call it panic bonding, where they're like two kids in a snowstorm clinging together for dear life because they're so scared and what they're feeling and what's going on. Right. So the finding out part and the 30 to 60 days after are a real piece of shit. We just always hope couples get to us quickly because you start to create neural pathways in negative ways with trauma that, you know, obviously can be undone at any time, but the faster we get to them, the faster it's undone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it, you know, like you're talking about trickle truth. Mm-hmm. I do wonder like how much information is good for the cheated partner to know, because sometimes I can understand why you'd want to know, or you'd think you'd want to know all the graphic information and how mm-hmm. in love they are and how many weekends were they away and did you buy her gifts and did, what did you say to her? Did you tell mm-hmm. her, you know, all the special things you tell me, or you tell her, mm-hmm. you know, it becomes an obsession, right? And
it sure does.
And it feels like a way of healing is to find out all the information so that, having all mm-hmm. the information, you then know what to do. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't, because I haven't, you know, been in that situation. But like, I wonder, not knowingly anyway. Apart from when I was a teenager, this one guy, he started to date someone else. But it's just, you know, it was just like, you know, you're a teenager. It's just, you know, it wasn't serious enough. But how much information... And does that depend on the person being cheated on? Like how much information mm-hmm. is good for you to know? And can you know too much?
This is a great question. And there are different schools of thought on this. Some people teach, tell every detail. What we 100% know from a neurological perspective is that the more you know, the harder it is to heal. No one needs to know the graphic details of a sexual encounter. I personally think it's cruel. And the nature of a trauma response is obsessing anyway, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And it's like, fuck, dude, like you made videos, right? Because some of our wives see videos. So there are a few elements that are harder for a woman to remove from her mind, right? Yeah. If she's prettier and not, I mean, obviously there is no prettier or not prettier. We're all equal. But if you perceive this person as better than
still,
you.
Yeah, but there's still a hierarchy. We can all feel a course. Bit less. We can all feel less prettier than someone else and prettier than someone. Yeah, right, right. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, and is she younger? You know, all of that crap.
Oh,
know,
yeah.
It's like, it's awful. Yeah.
100%. Those are the details. So what we encourage people, you know, if they haven't heard every detail, like trickle truths are big pieces that are left out, right? Like, okay. So we generally think that it's okay to share how long it's been, right? Has it been 6 months? Has it been 1 month? Has it been 6 years? Okay. Mm-hmm. When did it start? How did it start? Like, what's the evolution, right? Like, oh, we just started talking. Okay. Or were you looking on a website for someone, right? And then obviously when it ended, have you cut all ties and how do I know that? Okay.
Yeah.
And so, because you have to have that surety on occasion, we'll have someone who's like, oh, you know, well, we were friends before. So we just want to stay. I'm like, boy, you're off your rocker. Okay. Like cut all ties.
You've seen each other naked. If you think your partner's going to want you to stay friends up from an affair.
Exactly.
Not like a previous relationship and you've stayed friends or you've had children together is one thing, but she is the center of the affair. You don't really want her to stay in the life of you know, she's not a mate you're going to have over for Christmas dinner.
Exactly. Yes, that's not a thing. Mm. Now, not that it would be impossible for someone, but of course, general, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, we don't encourage 100 truths. Bigger truths, right? Like there's choosing not to tell a partner about intimate details that will stick in her mind for no good reason, right?
Yeah.
And then there's big pieces that are like, wait a second, there were actually three women, right? And was your sex protected? I mean, we tell everyone go get tested no matter what. It's just safe. But, you know, wanting to know if it was protected or not is obviously a fair question.
Yes.
Did you have sex in my bed, the bed that we share in our home, which oddly enough is not very common that people bring their partner to their home.
It's not common. Or is it?
It's not very, no, I mean,
thank God.
Of the hundreds of people that we have worked with, I literally can think of two off the top of my head that have like brought their affair partner to their marital bed, right? But women do that more often.
Men, oh, interesting.
Women who are having an affair will take men to their marital bed.
I guess we
men
like to be comfortable.
Don't.
We like to have the same lighting. And yeah,
right.
We know it's clean because we've cleaned it. There's a few pluses. And at least we don't have to go anywhere when it's done. You can just ask him to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you... I guess because I was going to ask you if men and women process recovering differently, but you obviously you have more experience mm-hmm. with men doing the cheating. Mm-hmm. But would you say that? I guess when I listen to you, it sounds like you would say that you should always forgive them and stay.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, forgiving, yes. I mean, forgiving is for me, not for them. Forgiving mm-hmm. means I'm giving up anger and resentment. And, you know, so I always believe in forgiving because otherwise then you just take this shit with you to the next relationship, right? And most couples who've had infidelity once and didn't heal it, they're going to get it again on either side. So it's a repetitive, like the habits and traits that you bring are habitual. So we are very inclined to reproduce something if we don't do work and learn and heal and grow. Right. So, you know, the forgiving and healing, whether you stay or go is extremely important for us. It's never our decision if someone should stay or should go. We do not, that's not our place to say. If there is, you know, we might make some different encouragements around confidence. If it's like the 10th affair that you found out about and he's not doing his work, right? So when women hire us on their own to go through their healing journey because their partner is like, I don't believe in therapy or, you know, whatever nonsense. I'm like, believe in therapy? This ain't Santa Claus, bro. You know, but but they're just like not ready to look inside, right? Mm. So those women usually do get divorced because he's not doing the work to make sure it doesn't happen again. We know somewhere inside of us, if we don't change what we're doing, then we can never trust.
Yeah. And I guess also that therapy is that confidence building for her to know what is it she wants actually in a partnership
exactly.
or in life in general. She may
That's right.
she may also decide, actually, I would rather be by myself than having to deal with finding out about another affair and
That's
me
right.
staying. Because it's also, mm-hmm. I think, there's so many angles to this, right? Because personally, I can understand why the idea of straying comes up when you feel like your partner takes you for granted.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had this in the past where I really felt like the person I was with just was just not, in my book, wasn't paying me enough attention, wasn't mm-hmm. giving me, like, was treating other people way better than he was treating me on so many different levels. And mm-hmm. I came to a point of like, what the fuck am I even doing here? And I mm-hmm. remember I was out with some friends. And this guy was clearly flirting. This was years ago when I still had it, honey. But this guy was flirting. This guy.
Oh,
this guy
you still got it.
Oh, I don't know, honey. I'm a 200 years old. But I that's how I feel. That's how I feel. But I was out and this handsome young man was flirting with me. And I was enjoying it a little bit too much. And I remember he wanted to exchange numbers. And I remember thinking, oh, I can't do that. But so I did nothing. Or did I? Actually, I think I did. But then I think I got a text and I freaked out. And I was like, oh, no. You know, it's like it was just too much reality. And the person I was with, I can't even call it was a relationship. I think we were friends first and then we started dating. And I think we'd been together a couple, two or 3 months, like nothing, you know? But it was like we were friends first and then we dated. And you'd think like someone would make a really great effort after they were pursuing you for so long. And then you're at the beginning, you think, you know, you should woo me. Where's the wooing? You know? And so, and that's what was happening. And so I remember I got that, I got, you know, I got this text, I freaked out, and I think I blocked the poor guy. He had no idea what was happening. And but then what I realized for myself was that the fact that I was flirting with the idea and letting someone flirt with me this way, I was just like, there was a part of me that already knew I had lost respect for for the guy I was dating. And that if I mean, maybe respect was not the correct word, I don't know. But I remember thinking, if I, because I'm a very loyal person, like to a fault. If I'm into you, like it's like the mafia. You know, like if I'm into you, I'm into you. This is it. But I was like, the fact that I'm enjoying that sort of attention. Normally, I don't enjoy that kind of attention if I'm into you. So I knew I had to end it because I actually want, I realized that I think I actually want to cheat on this person now. And I can't be already 2, 3 months in wanting to cheat on you. That's not who I am. And I think also because we did not have a long-term relationship yet, I don't think, you know, there was no work to be done. He was kind of showing me how I think the relationship would be. But so yeah, so I ended it. But yeah, so I think, but so the reason why I'm saying this is that I can understand if you're with someone and you're so in love with them and you're married with them and you've built a life and you feel them taking you for granted and you've literally, you know, dedicated years to them, really, building something and you not being appreciated at all day in, day out, or don't feel like you are. And then someone comes along and they're your work colleagues, they know you, you have a lot of things in common with work, you can bitch about your boss, you can, yeah, I don't know, whatever it is that you do. And you know, the other person also has, they're also married and they're having difficulties too. And you start to bond and it feels safer because they're married. So you don't feel like you're gonna leave. You're not going to go for a divorce because you're both married. You understand the
That's
boundaries.
right.
That's only one example, right? But I can see how it can go into a slippery slope if you're not having a proper conversation with your partner. And I think the difficulty is to go to someone and say, hey, that's actually what I should have done. And I didn't do it. But I should have gone to that guy I was dating. And I should have said, hey, just want to let you know, like you know, I don't know how I would have phrased it, but I should have said something like, do you know what? I actually really, really like you. We were friends first. And I obviously, you know, really like you more than that. And we're dating and I, you know, saw something, a potential with us. But I have to let you know, like something is missing for me because I don't feel like you're showing me that you appreciate me or something. I don't know how to word it, right? But to say, and to say, look, someone was giving me attention and I didn't like the fact that it was actually, I was actually enjoying it. Not because it was nice, but because I was craving it. I'm not getting it from you and I'm craving it. And I should have, maybe that if I'd had that conversation, maybe it would have turned out very differently, you know? But I didn't have that conversation. So I can imagine it must be really hard to have that conversation if you have children, a house, a mortgage. There's a lot on the stakes here to say, hey, you know, yeah.
For sure. I mean, it's so interesting how little genuine vulnerability there is in a
It's
marriage.
hard. It's so hard. We're not taught to
And
do that.
most people don't literally don't even know what it is. They think if I just share with you, like, well, I'm mad and I think you're not, being helpful around the house, that that's vulnerable, right? It's like, no, vulnerability is, I feel so alone. And I'm afraid that I'm not worthy of your love and care, and that you just don't think I'm that important, right? Vulnerability is soft, it's tender, it's it the vo the tone of voice is inviting, it's very pure. It's like, you know, the innocence of a 6-year-old coming to mommy and being like, "Mommy, this person at school was mean to me." You know, it's like,
Give me a
it's
name. That's
it,
exactly what my mom would be. I'd be like, give me a name. Let me call their parents right now.
Exactly. And that encourages, when you speak to your partner like that, I mean, we are literally built, body, mind, spirit, neurological function, to be like, what can I do? I see you. I want to support you. Right? And infidelity says, oh my God, look over there. Someone's seeing me. I haven't been seen for so long, if ever. And they're not seeing you,
No, they're
obviously,
not.
right? But you're feeling that piece of like attention. And what you just said a minute ago about craving.
Yeah, it's a
That's
validation, right?
right. Yes.
Do you know, I want to correct me if I'm wrong, but actually, I, and it's not a very nice thing to say, but I always sort of steer clear if someone says they don't feel like they deserve me or they don't feel like they're good enough for me. Okay, I just say it does not happen a lot, but I'm just saying it's happening in the past. For me, it's like to me that says you're gonna cheat on me. So when I hear someone, when I hear someone say that to me, what I'm hearing is that they are gonna cheat on me because they don't feel they need the validation out. They're gonna need that validation from somewhere.
And I mean, then that's certainly possible, but really what they're really saying is, I have some deep worthiness and self-love issues that I need to work on. Like, that's what they're actually saying. And it could culminate in cheating. Certainly. It could culminate in like infidelity with a bottle of booze. Right? Like, it could
Where
be
the alcohol
anything.
becomes more important than the relationship, you mean?
Exactly. Or it could be, but you're, I mean, it's just a way to, again, a way to numb yourself, to check out. It could be you're sitting in front of video games for 5 hours a night instead of hanging out and having dinner together, right? They're all,
Smoking weed all
yep,
day.
exactly. It's
Working too
all the
hard.
same. It's all the same. That's what we try to get our women to understand, is it's like, yes, it felt so personal, but it was not about you. We could have substitute. I tell women all the time, you could be a Victoria's Secret model,
Oh, that makes no difference. Yeah, you still get cheated on.
exactly,
It's so sad.
literally, right? So it's not about you or your body. It's not, you don't need to go get your face filled up with injections unless it honors you, right? You don't need to lose 30 pounds unless it's for you. But yes, that is one of the hardest, most grueling pieces for women. It's like they just feel like they weren't enough.
So how do you start to, because I feel like to move forward, before you can even start to forgive someone else, or maybe it starts with a forgiveness, I'm not sure. But I feel like part of moving forward is to trust yourself too, right? Or trust in the relationship, trust in yourself, because I think the person who cheats is always going to be like, will they try and get a revenge and cheat on me now? Because obviously I can't say anything. If they cheat, I don't have the moral high ground. So there's that fear, right? Of like that's like the irony of the situation. Now they're worried they're going to be cheated on, perhaps. And then the other person, they have this may have really triggered their self-esteem, their sense of worthiness, their, are they desirable? I mean, I know it would affect me really deeply if someone did that to me. I would really
Sure, of
question,
course.
do I look, how I look, or maybe who I am as a person. I would actually also question my own, am I just a horrible person that you just don't like to be around me anymore, and
Yes.
that's why you're not attracted to me. I'll just be like wondering all kinds of stuff, right? So how do you start to re like how do you what's the ABC of rebuilding something so you can move forward?
Yeah, that is a super great question. So a couple, I'm going to make a quick comment on a couple of things you said. So you said, maybe it starts with forgiveness and starts with deciding to trust the relationship. So those don't happen first. We have people all the time like, I've forgiven him. Well, why are you speaking to him in a tone of disdain? Right? Like, that's not forgiveness. Okay. So what they're saying is that I want to be able to move on. I want to forgive him. I don't want to feel like he's a piece of shit and I wasn't worthy of his love, right? So they might say I've forgiven, but really they just want to. So forgiveness and trust are consequences that happen down the line. There are books and so many spiritual teachings about, you just have to forgive, you just have to forgive. And I'm like, listen, forgiveness it isn't for most people just a choice. Yes, it's a choice, of course, but it's also a process. Right, forgiveness and trust shows up because people have strategically built connection through all the ways in which you are vulnerable and build emotional safety. So when women say, "How will I know he won't do it again?" And I always say, because you'll know at some point that the two of you could be locked in a closet for 10 days until you starved or thirst to death, and you would have the most bitchin' time until the end.
I didn't
Because you
understand that with the
don't.
closet, so I said that again.
It's just like an analogy. Like, you have so much fun together that you could literally be locked in a closet. You enjoy each other so much that it wouldn't even matter if you never left that closet until your dying day. You would just have fun anyway, right? So when couples go through our program and they build that kind of connection and emotional safety and vulnerability, I mean, we're literally teaching tediously vulnerability skills because people don't know how to do it. And as you said, it is scary as hell, right? To show all of you, okay? But when you do that and in these like curated, beautiful, intense ways, it becomes the tie that binds, right? Like when you like someone so much and you have grown together so much and learned and understand, and then you just know that you're safeguarded. You just know at some point that you're unbreakable. And so I let women know. And now, of course, that doesn't mean that no one could ever have an affair again. But it makes the chances very small. I don't ha obviously have a crystal ball. be cooler. I get paid more if I did, right? But when a connection feels in a certain way that most people honestly have never experienced with a partner before, sometimes with a best friend, but not with a partner. Then you just stop worrying. You just start trusting. You take the 360 off the phone and you stop asking the questions and all the stuff.
So it sounds like the healing part is that connection you have with someone else. It's like that deep connection.
In part, I mean, also we do individual and couple sessions. Like, you can't get out of doing your own work. If I'm checking out every way to Sunday and I don't even know how to share a basic feeling, right? My husband always allows me to use him as an example early in our marriage. If I shared a feeling, even in a tone that was just a little bit elevated, I would look at him and it would look like he had a stroke. He literally shut down, but from a parrot, like a true fight, flight, freeze space, not because he was trying to be a jerk or an asshole, which I certainly thought at first. I'm like, well, I guess you just don't ever want to talk, right? But he was totally shutting down. And these pieces are rebuilt one piece at a time. If you have learned how to shut down as a response to upset, or you've learned how to be angry as a response to feeling powerless along your life, then that's what you do. But that's not vulnerability. That's lashing out. That's making excuses to get to be mad or to get to shut down. So when that true vulnerability takes root, you live a whole different life in all facets of your life.
I guess because it sounds like you almost like rebalance your nervous system.
Oh, well, you have to. I mean, that thing is off the charts for sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
But I mean,
And
even.
that's your self work, right? Like you have
Yeah.
to know yourself. You have to be, if I'm not happy, I'm certainly not going to be happy with somebody else.
Of course, of course. But I think also, like, someone told me once, and I think it makes sense, is like when people meet someone and they're in a relationship, a lot of people think, oh, that relationship is going to make me happy. But actually, that's not what you are in the relationship for, is that you're in the relationship, you basically, you someone will see, like, you get triggered, right? And you work on yourself, and but you do this together in parallel, right? So at one point, one of you is like, the one who like is, losing sight of things a little bit, or maybe get a bit nervous or anxious, insecure about the relation, or whatever it is, or themselves, or the relationship, and it sort of goes, a bit in tango. But you then heal, you someone sees those different sides of you that are not the perfect sides, the thing that you put up when you the things that you show when you go to a job interview, for example, right? Or when you're dating. So they see all these different facets of you, and they support you, they accept you, they love you, and they so they sort of you heal over time, and that's actually what brings happiness. It's not that the relationship from the get-go is like, well, I'm not happy in this, so I'm out. It's like that's a lot of the things that we see, because that's how what was portrayed to us, and I'm not sure if I'm necessarily explaining the way that she was telling me, this person, but basically, it's like that happiness comes with time, because the reason why it comes with time is because you actually start to learn to accept all these different facets of yourself, because the other person is accepting you too, right? You go through it together, and that's the healing side of relationships.
Truly.
Yeah, but I'm not
Healing
sure
together
enough.
is very powerful.
It's just finding the person that will do that with you. That's a difficult one. How do you, because we talked about the connection, right? I wanted to just quickly ask you about how do you avoid the disconnection in the first place? Because I'm not sure if maybe those couples were connected at the beginning, and then time and life made them disconnect, right? Or they let it slide. But how do you avoid that disconnection in the first place?
Yeah, it's a truly great question. So there has to be some kind of connection or we would never be with someone, right? Now, the depth of that question is gets muddied with the hormones and chemicals of the falling in lust phase, right? Where it's like, oh, he's late all the time. It's so cute. He comes in with flowers, right? And then a year later, it's like that son of a bitch has never been on time, you know? And so we're literally built to overlook things that then become problematic. And so, the connection piece is tricky because what you aspire to is to fall in like every day of your life with your partner. Like, oh my God, literally Chris and I constantly are like googly gazing into each other's eyes going, I like you so much. Because in our old life, when we struggled, it wasn't because we didn't love each other. It was because one, we didn't like ourselves, obviously. And then we projected that out onto facets of each other that were like, I don't like that. All right. And so it is the most important thing. And when couples have been together for a while, you can sort of, do you know what the game Jenga is?
With the thing that try not to make the tower fall down.
Exactly. So it's like three, 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 same at pubs sometimes and with 2x4s, right? So I always use the analogy that when you've decided that you're going to be a mated pair, so to speak, then then you become this Jenga tower. And the Jenga tower is totally intact for a little while. Even the first fights are like, oh my God, wasn't that cute? We just had our first fight. And then the stuff comes, the pet peeves, and he left his beard clippings on the sink again, damn it. And she's telling me what time to be somewhere. And then the stuff happens. So every time there is a conflict And even a conflict in your mind. It doesn't have to be an actual fight with your partner, but a conflict that you're fighting out, right? You're calling him names or calling her names, or, you know, why does she always nag me, right? It might just be inside of your brain instead of coming out, but it's still a piece of conflict. So you can think about a Jenga tower has, like, I don't know, let's say 100,000 pieces. Every time there's conflict, a Jenga block is pulled out and thrown away. Okay. Wow. If you don't have the skills to put that Jenga block back in very, very rapidly, and also to stop having so many come out. Now, couples certainly are going to have over time some things that they are misaligned on. Well, nobody has to actually fight about it. I can't, I just share my opinion. You know, if I'm fighting with you, then I'm trying to control you and make you do my way, right? That's about me, not you, right? So people can learn to outgrow conflict of any kind, anytime. But let's say for argument's sake that people are going to have a few pieces of conflict in their marriage once they do their deep healing work. Well, then you're equipped immediately to be like, babe, the Jenga block is falling, grab it. and use your tools to put it back together efficiently. Otherwise, you know, by the time an affair happens, the tower fell down.
How do you put a Jenga block back together? Because I find that difficult sometimes to know how to repair after a conflict.
Well, honestly, I mean, that is what our programs are built on, right? So we teach people about emotional weapons.
Do you have like an example you could use? Yeah. Like, let's say something that's quite typical, like, you know, maybe even,
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I'll do something simple. So that everybody can really understand this. So we have a model that's four steps to talk about anything, anywhere, anytime with love and conflict free. Okay. It's literal prompts. You learn about the skill, you get a worksheet that has four prompts on it. So the first two start with I feel and the story I'm telling myself. Okay. That's a pretty common, a lot of people have an understanding of this. When we simply say I feel and we stop talking, our partner is extremely inclined to be like, oh my God, babe, you're feeling angry, right? It's like, you know, I go to Chris and I'm like, babe, man, I am just feeling really angry, right? Do I have to yell that at him? No. Okay. So that's a learning how to remove a tone and settle into a vulnerable state. Anger means I feel powerless. Okay. People who feel powerless either move to anger or they move to apathy. No third direction, right? So when we understand, if I did come to Chris with an angry tone, Chris knows now she's feeling powerless. And then he would say, babe, I hear your anger. What are you feeling powerless about? Right? And so you learn these skills back and forth. And just coming to the table and saying, I feel, even when you learn together and your partner says, I'm so mad, right? If they know how, if they've practiced not getting triggered from your trigger, which is how emotional weapons come out, right? If I'm angry, then, and I start to blame or accuse, whatever, then you're going to be like, well, here you go back, Sean, right? And so it takes practice and also inner calmness skills, which we teach around surrender, letting go and surrender skills, so that I can respond and literally be able to say, wow, I hear your anger. I know there's something powerless going on there. What's that story? Right? Or you say, I feel angry. And the story I'm telling myself is that you don't care about our family and you don't want to be here and that you prefer work. Is that story true? Right? Mm-hmm. So now we've taken out the word you, which is always inflammatory. Well, you work all the time and you don't even give a shit about us. That's very different than softening. Babe, I'm feeling so overwhelmed. I'm feeling alone. The story I'm telling myself is that you don't want to be here with me and the kids, or me, if that's the case, right? That gives the partner an opportunity to meet your vulnerability, which is keeping those Jenga blocks in place or popping them back in real fast, right? People, we just learn that we have to be volatile. Like, oh, I can't get my point across.
So that works if they reassure you.
Well, it doesn't even have to be a reassurance. Sometimes you just fill out the four steps on your own. And when you get to your story, right, people aren't with someone that they genuinely believe don't love them. That's not a thing. And so people are like, oh, well, you don't love me because of this. And when you start to write down the elements of your story, it illuminates the like atrocity of them in many cases. Like, oh, he hates me. And it's like, he hates me. Really? Right. So then we move to the next step, which is like illuminating the victim position within it. And I don't mean like poor pitiful me, although sometimes that can show up. It just means, where am I disempowering myself here? What are the elements of this story that just paint me as the victim and him the perpetrator, so I can be justified in being angry? Right. So once you start to intellectualize what's actually going on in your brain, and just instead of being like, oh my God, I had that thought that was so amazing and true. Ooh. Right. We're just fascinated with our own damn thoughts. And so we think they're true and we have an opinion and we're like, yes, that's the gospel right there. It teaches you how to grab a thought, like with a little butterfly catching net, and inspect it and to make a decision. Is this the thought process that I want? Is it healthy? Is it even true? Right? And of course it takes time and it takes practice, but when you do it in a tedious way for even 7 days, your life has changed, because you're making sure that your thinking is more integrous. Does that make sense?
Like, when integrous, does that mean in integrity, or what's that mean?
Yes.
So the first one is like, you know, I feel. The second one is, you know, is it true, or I hear you?
And no, the second one is the story I'm telling. The actual prompt is, the story I'm telling myself to ensure feeling miserable is. Uh-huh, my husband hates me. He thinks I'm fat and ugly. Yeah. He never loved me to begin with. Right. Those are the stories that perpetuate then wanting vengeance, or right. Like it's a,
yeah,
then it,
yeah.
Then the drama grows.
Of
okay.
Course.
So yeah. The story I'm telling myself to make sure that I feel absolutely miserable is X, Y, Z.
Like the story you to validate yourself, right? To validate, not validate yourself, but to validate your feelings, right? To co-sign
exactly.
on your anger, to go, well, this is why. And
exactly.
And so is the third step that you said, like, you know, what, is it true?
Yeah.
Is that when you question it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Poke holes in this, right? Be an attorney for the other side. Okay. Do I actually believe he doesn't love me at all? Okay. Well, we have children together. We, you know, or do I actually really believe that, you know, I'm the last priority, or that he never loved me, right? And then it's like, okay, well, there's also another million memories up there of good times that you've had. Okay, so even if it's like, maybe it's not true, you soften a little, and you soften a little, and you soften a little, and you're like slight tapping that Jenga block back in, right? And that doesn't mean that every single problem is solved with this model. It means that you teach yourself how to soften around conflicting pieces, and make sure that you're not just trying to justify crappy feelings, right? Like, which is what most of us do. It's like, oh,
yeah.
I used to be a great attorney. I could talk Chris into thinking that he, like, you know, burned down our house.
Yeah.
But you know, it certainly isn't favorable.
No. And is that the fourth step?
So the fourth step is recontextualizing.
Telling a new story.
You got it. And I tell people all the time, if you're going to tell yourself a story, I mean, you know, basically all of our thoughts are made up anyway, or they're conditioned patterns, or, you know, programs that we got, right? Why do you think people think cheaters are assholes? Well, because you've heard that, and then you heard it again and again and again and again and again. So now there's an assumption that cheaters are bad people. Well, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're going to tell yourself a story, might as well make you feel good.
Be a good one, yeah. And I guess it's also, it comes into the whole, you know, philosophy of, how do you know something to be true? You know, because you heard it, like you said, about cheater being bad people, or how do you know that, you know, that he doesn't love you? You know, is that true? Like, you know, there's... And I guess it's also, I think there's this quote in this movie, Can't remember what it's called. It's the one, it's the movie where this famous actress loses her memory. It's based on a true story, actually. Oh gosh, hang on. And what's her name? She was in the it was she's in the movie The Notebook. And
Oh,
I'm gonna
is that Jennifer Garner?
No, The
Or
Notebook. Hang on, I'm not now
no.
gonna look. Okay, it's what's her name? Rachel
Oh,
McAdams.
yeah,
Rachel
Rachel
McAdams, yeah.
McAdams.
And then there's a movie she's in, I think it's called The Promise, The Vow, The Vow from
Oh,
2012.
yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good. Oh my God. But basically, it what you were saying just makes me think of this, you know, because we're talking about cheating, right? And so I was just thinking about this film. She gets angry at her mom because her mom stayed after her husband, well, or her father, sorry, had an affair with one of her school friends. So, like, you know, around the same age, you know, and he had an affair. And I think it's Jessica Lange actually who plays her. And so her mother says, I didn't leave. I chose to, hang on. I chose to stay for all the things he did right, not leaving for the one thing he did wrong.
Yes.
And I thought that was so deep. Again, I'm not condoning
So
the
deep.
act of cheating. I don't, it's
No,
not condoning.
obviously not.
Yeah,
No.
it's not condoning the act of cheating, you know, but we all do things. It may not be cheating, but you may still be doing something that's just as hurtful to someone else, you know.
Exactly. I actually say that to couples all the time, and just like from, my own marriage many years ago, it's like I unleashed anger on Chris for so long because of my own inner hurt that was crippling to him in many ways.
Of
That isn't
course.
any better. That's not for me. That doesn't have to be true for everyone. For me, that was as harmful as infidelity.
It's because it's also a type of betrayal of trust, right? Because
Of course.
of the safety of the cocoon that you built, right? And all of a sudden that comes out, and it's a form of, yeah, there's a lot of
That's
ways
right.
we betray each other, you know, as human
That's
beings.
right.
So I really enjoy. I forgot actually how you know your voice is like soft and very just like really. I really enjoy listening to you. You know, there's something very like calm and soft and but strong at the same time. You know, it's beautiful listening to you. And
Thank you.
yeah, I'm really glad we got to do this.
Me
And
too.
thank you. I want to ask you the finishing thoughts, I call them. It's the two questions I ask every one of my guests. Now, I went back and I checked what you answered last time, so we'll see what you say this time. And if you want to
I
know,
don't
I'll return you.
remember. Okay.
No, not none of the returning guests remember, but I've got them written down. But so I want to ask you this time around again. What life lesson do you wish you'd learned sooner?
Oh gosh. I mean, this is a hard question, Angie, because I am a my husband calls me his pirate bride, because I'm like a sassy, saucy minx, and I like to have bourbon sometimes and swear, but also like deeply, deeply spiritual, where, Chris and I spend the first 2 to 3 hours of our day every day meditating, reading spiritual texts, and having conversations, right? So that's like the real foundation. So what do I wish I had known earlier? I mean, I think it all happened in divine timing. I don't know that there's, I can't think of one thing that I wish I had known because, I mean, my God, my life is so amazing. My marriage, my husband, it's all happened when and at the ages that it needed to.
Oh, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna ask you the second one, and then if you want, I will tell you what you said last time. But I don't want to tell you just because of the beautiful answer you just gave. I'm holding off telling you what you said until you answer the second one. So the second one is, what do you not put up with anymore?
Oh gosh, in marriage or in
Anything
general?
in general. It could be whatever the first thing that comes to mind.
Well, the first thing, it's not a not, so what do I not put up with? I don't really enjoy hanging out with people for very long if we're not having like deeper, interesting conversations, right? Like, I'm just not interested in talking about hair and nails and the weather, yeah. right? Like,
yeah.
So I would say it's not a position of like, oh, I'm never going to put up with that shit. It's just like, I don't really seek out opportunities like that aren't, you know, have some kind of depth around them.
Yeah. It's not something you enjoy for a very long time. Like that chit chatter, yes. light chit chat. Yeah, no, I can understand that. I totally understand that. So do you want to hear what you said last time?
I don't know. Maybe it'll illuminate some growth that I've had. So yeah, let's hear it.
Only if you want to.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Do yeah. So the first one, you know, like what did you wish you'd learn sooner?
Mm-hmm.
And you said quite a bit. I narrowed it down because.
Okay.
But the essence was that if you could go back to your. So you said, if I could go back to my 18-year-old self, mm-hmm. I would teach her how to surrender the anger so that she could have been joyful much sooner in her life and also not lash out her anger on anyone from a driver to her husband.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that tracks.
Yeah. Nice. And then, yeah. And the second thing you said was that it would have been nice to know that I could have had a fight-free marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I think that's all of us. I mean, we all fight in couple relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the feeling of anger 100%. And I think, yeah, it's often very misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you said, it's the helplessness, right? You feel helpless. And that's the emotion that you grab onto to come back up for air.
Exactly. It's like they're coping emotions. Yep.
Yeah. For the second one, why did you not put up with any emoji? Do you want me to tell you what you said?
Sure.
That you said a few, I'm just, again, narrowing it down, but you said, I can't tolerate meanness.
Yes. That's still true. People
who are being mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's still true.
Before you tell us, Sean, where we can find you and work with you, is there anything mm-hmm. else that you want to share with us that I may not have given you the opportunity to say?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I can't think of anything like super specific, just always an encouragement for people, no matter what the context or situation, just do the healing work. You'll be so glad you did, you know, instead of blaming your stuff and upset on others. It's like, just do your work. It's not your boss's fault that your life sucks or whatever. So yeah, that's probably it.
So Sean, can you please tell us where can we find you? Where can we work with you?
Mm-hmm. So, if you go to our website, which is reimaginelove.com, there are, if it's truly for a couple who's struggling with rehabbing from infidelity, there's a free training on there that is a wonderful, wonderful start for people. And there's a 5-day kickstart that helps people. So we have some free options. And then there's also a link on our website to book a breakthrough call with myself or a team member to talk about working with our team when people are, you know, don't want to wait the 3 years to get over this and they want to see it happen in 3 to 6 months, right?
Yeah.
You can find us there. Yep.
Thank you so much, Sean. Such a pleasure to have you back. I'm really, really glad we did this.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, me too. This is great. You're amazing. Your show is gorgeous. And I'm just saying thankful to be here.
Thank you so much. And that's our episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. It can be a screenshot that you text them, a link, the name of it. Any of those will do. If you give a 5-star rating and a review, that really, really helps the algorithm for it to be shared on all the different platforms. And just a little note, please be aware that this podcast is always free to listen to. Any platforms that want to charge you for it are doing so without my consent, okay? This is free. You can listen to it on Apple, Spotify, all of the other regular listening platforms that don't charge you. This is free. So don't let someone charge you to listen to my podcast. Until next time.
Use it now. inappropriately.